Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
This week, something happened in the Ridgewood High School that I'm sure many of you have now heard about, though perhaps not all of you. A young man, a student at RHS, was beaten so badly that he was hospitalized with a fracture in his skull, possibly needing surgery to reconstruct his face. My heart beats faster, actually, even just saying all of that. The facts are somewhat murky to those of us outside of the school, as they should be, to protect the privacy of minors. But what seems to be known at the moment is that this boy was standing up for a girl who was being cyberbullied. And as a result, he was then cyberbullied and then attacked twice this week, the second beating resulting in the hospitalization. During that second attack, the reports are that some 50 or more students were present. I know. Watching it take place, recording it on their phones. No one, it seems as of now, went to get help or tried to prevent it. And it's that last part that shocks me to my core, because frankly, we live in a world where cyberbullying doesn't surprise me, and in some ways, neither even does the attacking, though both break my heart. But the fact that so many youth were there just watching, that's the part that really gets me. All those phones and no one called a parent, no one called the police, nothing. And maybe it'll come out that somebody tried, but for now it looks like these youth just stood there. As a parent, this story terrifies me. It terrifies me to be reminded that youth are capable of this. It terrifies me to think of the victim and his family, and of the attacker and his family, and of all those who did nothing and their families. And it brings tears to my eyes and makes my heart race, because what worries me is it seems so to encapsulate all the things that are ailing us. The fact that none of those kids stepped up, we are plagued by this sense of disconnection and fear and questioning or lack of moral courage. We're allowed by this world we live in, by our video games and our online lives, to be one step removed, to treat all things like a TV show or a movie, to forget that these are real things, that that was a real child whose body was beaten and bloodied. And it feels like the disconnection and the fear are causing us to forget what it means to be together and live together well as a society. It's like we're forgetting the social contract bit by bit. That agreement that says we will, by and large, abide by rules that keep us all safe. And it reminds me yet again of how lacking even the social contract is. Because it's a contract, and what I think we need all over this wide world is a covenant, because they are not the same. They come from different priorities, and they stress different values. If you were raised in a tradition that uses the Bible at all, you've probably gotten a sense of covenant. The scriptures are filled with them. We heard the first covenant written about in the Hebrew scriptures in that first reading. After the flood, God covenants with Noah. God promises to never again flood the land and kill everything and everyone. And Noah and his family agree not to commit murder and to increase and multiply. The sign of this covenant between Noah and God is a rainbow. Every time the clouds come and a beautiful rainbow appears, God says God will remember in that moment this covenant made with all humankind. Then, of course, later there's the covenant that God makes with Abraham, which begins the special relationship between God and the Jewish people. This one involves circumcision on the part of the humans, as well as abiding by God's laws, while God promises to protect the Jewish people, give Abraham descendants, and so on. This one's a really interesting covenant. There's a Midrash, which is a Jewish commentary, that says that God offered that covenant that he makes with Abraham, he offered it over here to this nation, over there to that nation, over and over. God offered this covenant to all the nations of the earth, and they all refused. One by one, they refused the Torah. The demands were too onerous, and the perks of being chosen were not great enough. And then the Jewish people accept it. And I love that idea of God shopping around his covenant, trying to find somebody to enter into this difficult bargain, trying to find a people willing to come into this challenge of a special arrangement based in mutual promises. There are many, many more covenants in the Hebrew Scriptures, one with Isaac, one with Jacob, on and on. The word covenant appears 332 times, and nearly 300 of them are in the Hebrew Scriptures. But there are some in the New Testament. The first mention comes in Matthew chapter 26 at the Last Supper, at the moment of the institution of the communion. Jesus has broken the bread and he says, "This is my body," and then he takes the cup and gives thanks for the wine and he offers the cup to the disciples and he says, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for the many, for many for the forgiveness of sins." So covenant is there all over this one of our six sources. And then if you jump forward about 1,500 years after the writing of the Gospels, you've got the pilgrims arriving to this land, and they were making covenants. The Mayflower Compact uses the word covenant. From 1620, the Pilgrim's Covenant reads, "We, the Lord's free people, join ourselves by a covenant of the Lord into a church estate in the fellowship of the gospel, to walk in all his ways made known, or to be made known to us, according to our best endeavors." So here's the important part of that. The covenant is not with God, as the biblical covenants were. This pilgrim covenant from 1620 is a covenant explicitly between people. They wrote, "We join ourselves by a covenant of the Lord into a church estate." We could certainly argue that the covenants Noah and Abraham made with God involved others because they dictated ways of behaving on earth, but the promise was made between human and divinity. As history unfolds, though, covenants come to include not only explicit promises to God that impacted human interaction, but explicit promises between humans. And this continues. First Parish in Dedham in 1636 agreed to, "In the fear and reverence of our Almighty God, mutually and severally promise amongst ourselves and each to profess and practice one truth according to that most perfect rule, the foundation whereof is everlasting love among ourselves and to each other." In 1842, the Unitarian Society of Geneva, Illinois, wrote this covenant, "Being desirous of promoting practical goodness in the world and of aiding each other in our moral and religious improvement, we have associated ourselves together, not as agreeing in opinion, not as having attained universal truth in belief or perfection in character, but as seekers after truth and goodness." We have associated ourselves together with not a single mention of God in that one. And then in the 19th century, too, the Ames Covenant, which I recited every single Sunday as a child at my Unitarian church, "In the freedom of truth and in the spirit of Jesus, we unite for the worship of God and the service of all." We are, as Unitarian Universalists, without question, a covenantal faith. We describe ourselves that way. The religious threads that eventually developed into Unitarianism and Universalism were grounded in the covenantal tradition of Christianity, which itself identified the Jewish tradition as its heritage. We are inheritors of covenant. But what does that actually mean? What is a covenant? Why does it matter? One way to understand what a covenant is as a promise, a mutually agreed upon set of promises that two or more people make to each other, just as Dylan described this morning. There's an implication of a third party, potentially. For many of us, and certainly for many of our congregations today, that third party isn't God. Maybe it's philosophical ideals or moral obligation, a higher call, a call to our better natures. And this is where we begin to see the difference between a covenant and a contract. A contract is made between two parties, and if one party fails to uphold their end of the bargain, the other party is absolved of theirs. We sign a contract, and I agree to pay you $50 to do a job. If I don't pay you, you don't have to do the job. If you don't do the job, I don't have to pay you. We all understand that. We would all likely agree that that's a sensible way to treat a contract. But a covenant is different. If we sit down and agree to behave together in a certain way, and someone else messes up or forgets or missteps, if someone breaks covenant, that doesn't absolve me. With a covenant, God or moral obligation or whatever word works there for you, the presence of that other entity beyond the individuals covenanting together means that I have to continue upholding my end even if the other person fails to uphold theirs. One misstep doesn't break the covenant. The bindings are tight enough to support us through a challenge like that. That is a huge difference between contract and covenant. The idea that another person's failure to uphold their promises doesn't absolve me of my promises, and that covenants allow for missteps and calling back in. A colleague once said to me that that is the most necessary component of a covenant, a way back in. And that way back in clause works for all of us, because the reality is covenant is incredibly hard. That's why in that midrash, nation after nation rejects God's covenant. Living together, making promises, committing to certain things and standing by them, acknowledging and owning our mistakes, apologizing when we've screwed up, accepting others' apologies, forgiving, giving a second chance. These are incredibly challenging things, and they have been understood as difficult for thousands of years. Covenants are not easy, and the truth is, sometimes there isn't a way back in. There are moments when the wrongs have been too great, or the inability to keep covenant becomes so egregious and so continuous that covenant must be broken. They're not infinitely stretchable. They're not unlimited. Some things are unacceptable. Imagine that bound circle from the Time for All Ages. It's one thing if someone missteps. It's another if someone takes out some scissors and cuts up the covenant, right? And we would all agree to that readily in most contexts, that certain things simply aren't allowed. But in our efforts to be radically welcoming, to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we sometimes forget that to be radically welcoming and to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person doesn't mean accepting all behaviors. I'm reminded of how much this looks like parenting. As a parent, you love your child, and that doesn't mean you let them do everything they want, right? A child's inherent worth is not limited by the lessons their parents try to teach them about what is morally correct and what isn't. For some reason, we forget this a bit when it comes to church. We sort of lean into the weird caricature of universalism that says you can do anything because you'll eventually be saved and everything's okay. But that isn't actually what Unitarian Universalism teaches us. We don't believe that you can do and say anything. We believe in the value of covenant as a binding entity. We believe in abundant love that's available to all. But that doesn't mean that we love and embrace and hold in covenant all ways of being. So what do we have? We have this tradition and history of making promises to each other, agreeing after conversation about how we will be and live and seek and question together, bound by our common promise, by our common commitment to right living, by our common investment in spiritual growth and questioning and seeking. And we have an awareness that every now and then these promises will be broken, and that the breaking from one side doesn't mean the other side gives up. We have mechanisms for coming together again that involve apologies and ownership and recommitment. And we have an acknowledgement that continually and egregiously breaking covenant means that perhaps this place or this covenant isn't the right fit. Someone once said to me that it boils down to respect, and in some ways that's right. Respect for each other, for this community, for the purpose of our work. Respect for the inherent worth and dignity of the gathered community as individuals and as a whole. But I would take it one step further, one step deeper, using different language. And I want to say that covenantal relationship also boils down to love and compassion, and that that is also an important difference from contracts, even different from the social contract that presumably keeps us safe from harm. Because contracts, even the social contract, are goal-oriented, self and sometimes community-serving, even when ethical and fair. They're about what I can get, what I can receive from participation. But a covenant is about relationship, about the building up of compassion and love and care for everyone. Do I love myself enough to be able to recognize my mistakes and apologize for them because I know my mistakes don't render me unlovable? Do I love my community enough to recognize when someone else is unable or when I am unable to abide by the promises that make it safe and healthy for everyone to be here? And then do I have enough love in my heart to take difficult steps forward? Do I love my community enough to be on my best behavior even when that's challenging? Do I love the individuals in my community enough to forgive them and recognize that my love for them is not conditional or based on their perfection? Do I love the journey of spiritual seeking, the joys of gathered worship, the work of justice that we accomplish best when we work together? Do I love these things enough not to demand that my individual needs be front and center? Do I love enough not to believe that this community comes together for my sake alone? Do I love the others in my community enough to speak directly to them when things are wrong, even when that's hard to do? Am I living in a way that is guided by love in its biggest sense, integrating love of self, of neighbor, of community, of life, putting that love and compassion above my self-interest? How many of you knew the USR Covenant? How many of you had ever even read it? Okay, that's better. Still not a lot, but that's better. Some of the highlights in that covenant to respect and honor diversity among us, to communicate with kindness and support, to keep an open mind, to help encourage and trust each other, to work for justice and engage in acts of service and compassion to others. How did it feel to say those words? Good?
Great?
Okay, good. That's excellent. And how many of you went, not really doing that, or gotta work on that piece a little bit? How many of us really give thought to that covenant in here? Forget about even out there, but how many of us give thought to that covenant really, even inside these walls, trying to live by it? There's one thing that feels a little bit missing to me from that covenant, which is the approach to conflict, right? And the approach to conflict, I think, is something that we clearly, as a larger society, need to work on. And so I wish for our covenant, and maybe in time we will get there, but I wish for our covenant here to say something about how we will be together when things go wrong, when we're hurting and afraid and feel disconnected, or when we try to step outside covenant, or we find ourselves doing that. There are so many reasons why that incident at Ridgewood High School occurred. And there will be presumably more information, many more conversations about why and how and what to do moving forward. And I'm not naive. Covenant is not going to solve all the world's ills. There will always be those who operate outside it, who put themselves first, who forget our shared humanity, who don't want to be part of a circle of love and trust. But I really do think that covenant has the potential to help us shift our understanding of what it means to live in the world and to live among others. It has the potential to move us from self-service to outward service, to move us from legalistic notions to relational ones, to move us from how can I protect myself and get out of this agreement, to how can all of us together stay at the table set for the human family and work together for all of our betterment. Covenant has the potential to offer us here in this house and out in the world a healing, safer, more compassionate, and loving way to go. And so I hope you will take time to reread that covenant in the weeks to come. It's on the website. Someone said, where is it? It is on the website. You can find it. To read it and really think about where are you living that covenant every day and where are you falling short and what else needs to be in there. And we will continue that conversation.